We are starting the CCGNSO member meeting. This is part two.
Welcome back, everybody. Could I encourage you to grab a seat and we will restart? We seem to have lost a number of people to the board or to coffee on the way. Okay, so let's welcome back once again. A regular feature on our agenda is Kim from IANA for the IANA update. Kim.
Thanks very much. It's good to see everyone again. This is the regularly scheduled update from the IANA department for CCTLDs. First thing I wanted to update you on is a series of reviews that we've been performing within the IANA department. For those that aren't familiar, we started a new IANA contract period 1st of October last year. As part of the first year of operating this contract, we have a series of reviews that we're performing relating to how we execute the IANA functions, what improvements need to be made. In terms of the reviews we've performed so far, they're documented on the IANA website. There's a web page dedicated to them. You can go there, click and find out the terms of reference of the reviews, the comments that we've received, the analysis of those comments, and our final conclusion based on those comments. We also have a number in the pipeline, which I'll come to in a little bit. From the consultations that we've already conducted and concluded, we have a few improvements that we've already identified and we'll be implementing through the course of this year. The first thing we're going to implement is service notices. So whenever we have system outages, for example, whenever we have a new service implemented or some kind of service change, like we've implemented a new tool or there's a change to the way to interact with us, we're going to have an announcement process for that. This will involve basically a series of announcements that will be available via an email list. You can subscribe for notifications. We'll also have a web page where they're documented in chronological order. And then if you wanted to subscribe to them, we'll also have an RSS feed as well. I think it's worth noting that, across the entire gamut of what IANA does, whether it's root zone maintenance, protocol registry maintenance, and so on, a constant recurring theme we keep hearing is we want to be subscribed to notifications, we want to be notified of changes to this particular registry. So when we're implementing this, we're going to be mindful of developing an approach that will allow us to provide notifications across all of what we manage. So I think in the long run, there'll be a capacity there to, if you wanted to be notified whenever there's a change to the root zone registry, we can give you a notification of that. If you wanted to be notified of some other registry, we'll have some kind of overarching system for the IANA registries to allow you to do that. Another consultation we did was on our customer dispute resolution process. This is what we've historically called the escalation process within IANA. Essentially, if you have a request with IANA and for whatever reason you feel that the way your request has been handled was not appropriate or requires clarification, we've provided a way that you could lodge a request to have your request reevaluated. This was actually developed in close consultation with the CCNSO back in around 2006, our original policy. So this consultation was to show the community our current policy and to ask feedback on the way we do this customer dispute resolution. So we got a fair amount of feedback on this, and I think one of the key takeaways from the feedback was that we should increase awareness that we even have this procedure. A lot of people were not aware of this escalation procedure, so we're going to take some steps to making it more visible. For example, as part of the automated message that's sent to every one of our customers when they do a request with IANA, we're going to notify them that this procedure is available to them, provide a link where they can read about the procedure. We also, as part of that, will produce reporting on the number of complaints or the number of times this procedure is invoked. The truth is that for the first 7 years of its use, we've received, you know, single-digit usage over the entire period. It's very rarely been used. Whether that's a reflection on lack of awareness or lack of complaints, I think, you know, reporting will help the community better assess that and help us refine it moving forward. We also did a consultation on how we do IP address allocation, and some of the feedback on that was that we should have improved reporting. They wanted, for example, machine-readable reports. They wanted certain aspects tightened up, so we'll be doing that as well. We have a raft of upcoming consultations. I think of particular interest is user documentation on things like how we do delegations and redelegations of CCTLDs. We're currently working with NTIA to internally and then with NTIA to finalize the consultation documentation. So once that's available, we'll post that online and we'll invite you to review it and provide comments on that. We also provide documentation on what's called sources of policies and procedures. So this is really identifying what are the key policy documents that has informed the way IANA does its job. And we'll also consult on what's called dashboards, but essentially that's our performance reporting processes. So as always, I think I said this in Beijing as well, these processes only work if we get feedback. You know, we're always receptive to feedback, but this is really a formal mechanism where you can get your opinions on the record. It particularly helps us as IANA staff that if there's any question about why we do things a certain way, we can link it back to the community feedback that was put on the record during one of these consultations. So I really encourage you during these consultations to review the material. If you have suggestions about how IANA can improve the way we do certain things, please do communicate that feedback to us. It will really help us inform us develop our services. Another topic, new GTLD readiness. For those who are in Beijing, I'll just say quite simply, nothing new here. I think, you know, we're on track. For those that were not familiar with the Beijing presentation, the IANA delegation process is the last step in making a new GTLD live in the DNS. IANA has historically been involved in all delegation of GTLD requests in the past, but recognizing that there'll be a large volume of them, our focus in the last 6 to 12 months has been improvements, firstly, to our technical systems, our automation systems, to support new GTLDs. Our goal is to make the process as streamlined and as automated as possible. One aspect of that is, in the past, the delegation reports for GTLDs have been narrative. We've moved to a checklist approach, so the delegation reports for new GTLDs will be a checklist. This checklist will be automatically populated by our technical systems internally, so it really help us in streamlining the process as well. We've also hired an additional staff member to support the relatively minor, but nonetheless there'll be some increase in staff activity to process all these. In terms of how the GTLD delegation process actually starts, we've focused on integrating the workflow with the new GTLD workflow that already exists. So customers that are applying for new GTLDs will, through the existing system, be handed off to the IANA system. It's all done by a very smooth process. I'll skip past this one. I think the key point about that checklist that I just mentioned is that really, unlike CCTLD delegations, GTLD delegations, the evaluation has already happened before it comes to IANA. All the factors that are relevant for whether a GTLD should be delegated or not really is that new GTLD process that's happening right now. Things like initial evaluation, extended evaluation, that's the process that involves assessing whether a TLD should be delegated or not. So by the time it comes to the IANA department, it really should be a straightforward maintenance issue. I mentioned that we've added an additional staff member, so that brings the total root zone management staff to 3. And I've already mentioned that our focus has been to reduce the amount of staff time per request by using automation systems. But we also have the flexibility that if for whatever reason in a given week or a given period there is an onslaught of new requests, that we can reassign staff to sort of ramp up our capacity during that period. So I think the net takeaway for new GTLDs from us is that, firstly, the way we're going to process new GTLD delegation requests is really much more akin to the way we do routine day-to-day root zone updates. That means, turn around in a matter of days, not a matter of weeks or months. Very routine, streamlined process. And unlike CCTLDs, the substantive review is not happening within our department. It's happening elsewhere within ICANN. And importantly, the processing times for you as our existing customers, our existing CCTLDs, will not be impacted. We have sufficient resources to be able to process our existing workload of root zone changes, despite having all these additional new GTLD requests as well. Finally, 3 years of DNSSEC at the root. Yesterday was the 3rd year anniversary of having the root zone DNSSEC signed. In the last 3 years, we've processed 385 DS record change requests at IANA. The net result is today 1/3 of TLDs out there are signed with DNSSEC. That's only going to grow with new GTLDs. They're all required to be signed with DNSSEC from the beginning. So, I think the number of TLDs that are not signed will be in the margins in very short order. And in terms of DNSSEC adoption, there was a report out from APNIC just a couple of days ago who studied traffic and found that 8% of all DNSSEC lookups, DNS lookups now are DNSSEC enabled. That's up from just 3% in March. So just in the last few months, there's been a large uptick, primarily driven by the fact that Google, in its services, has implemented DNSSEC validation very recently. I know that I believe the next version of the Apple operating system as well will have DNSSEC validation turned on by default. So we're seeing that software vendors are now implementing DNSSEC as turned on by default, so that's only going to drive up adoption of DNSSEC. So that's really that was the quick summary of what we've been doing in the IANA department the last couple of months.
Okay, thank you, Kim. Any comments or questions from the room, please? Carolina?
Hi, Kim. Thank you. Good morning. Carolina Guerre for the records from LACTLD. We had an incident a couple of weeks ago with CCTLD who wanted to publish its secondary server online, and they wanted to get in touch, and it was actually like very difficult. So if you could let us know about this 24-hour hotline or service, so that CCTLDs can, when they have this server updates and they want to contact IANA to make it more friendly for them.
Sure. So for those that aren't aware, ICANN provides 24-hour response for root zone emergencies. Whilst what is defined as emergency is really for the TLD manager to decide, our general guidance is if there's some event that means your TLD is either completely offline or under imminent threat of being offline, we encourage you to use this service. Obviously, you can contact us during regular business hours via our normal methods, but If you have a change that really needs to be done in a matter of hours rather than waiting for the next business day, we have a 24-hour telephone number that you can call. This will go to a call center who will take your details. They have a roster of all the available ICANN staff. They'll call all of them until they reach someone and hand off the issue. That staff member will then call you back and arrange for what needs to be done to process this request as an emergency. So our commitment to you is that we'll, you know, we're available, we'll have staff available if an emergency should arise. And, you know, if you need further details about how that process works, I'm happy to talk to anyone. In terms of the telephone number itself, we don't post it on the IANA website just because we don't want nuisance callers. But we send it out to all TLD managers on an annual basis. And if anyone needs a refresher on what that number is, please contact me and I'll provide it to you.
So, Kim, that's reliant on your IANA contact information being up to date, of course.
That's true. So I encourage you all to have your IANA contact information up to date.
So one of the things that we touched on earlier a few years ago was about the churn of staff who may not be aware of this and so on. So it's important to be aware that there's that reminder sent out. And I do recall that the desire for an emergency contact came from this community as well. Okay. Anyone else? No, in which case, could you join me in thanking Kim? Okay, so for our next session, we are due to receive updates from the Finance Working Group and the SOP Working Group. And if I can suggest that this is also the place where we could continue our discussions from earlier on financial contributions, both of which seem to require Byron and Keith. Keith. Roloff, sorry. I'm already tired. So, welcome to Roloff, Chair of the Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group.
Okay, thank you, Leslie. This is just to give you some feedback on what we've been doing over the last 2.5 months since ICANN Beijing, and to give you an update about what's coming over the next period. Next slide, please, Gabby. So we've been busy with two things, the FY14 operational plan and budget and the strategic planning process. First on the operational plan and budget, the draft was published by ICANN at the end of May. We filed our comments, which we also sent to the community, to all members, but also to the larger CC community, end of June. I'll get back on what the highlights of those comments are. On the 6th of July, Xavier sent an overview of the comments that I can receive on the operational plan and budget, and he also gave an update about the changes that were made in the plan. We had a face-to-face meeting last Sunday of the SOP working group, and we had Xavier there, and he gave us the first high-level reaction on our comments. We understood from him that since we filed our comments a bit late, that we will get answers from the second answering round. I can answer these days all comments received, but does so in two rounds. As far as we know, the final plan and budget will be approved this month. I don't think it will be here in Durban, but probably in a later board meeting. Oh, and those other two, that's old. I should have removed that. Just ignore the last two lines. So next slide, please, Gabby. So our main comments on the plan and budget are that this plan is definitely an improvement from previous plans. There's more information, it's better structured, there's a clearer link between expenses and programs. On the other hand, we are, and that's the last point on this slide, in very many cases, it's expenses related to programs and not to projects. So we found it very difficult to judge if certain activities were needed, if they were executed in an, or are going to be executed in an efficient and in an effective way. A comment that we made just now to the board is that we see a strong increase in operating expenses, so that's separate from the expenses for the new GTLD program, but that's ICANN's professionalization. It's almost a quarter, 24% added. And if you combine that with still a lack of measurable goals, a large increase in staff, more than 65 FTEs will be added at the end of 2014 as compared to the end of the FY 2013. I think there's a clear risk that that a lack of efficiency and effectiveness in certain areas will just be covered by adding staff and spending money. We don't have a clear solution for that, but we brought this to the attention of Xavier and to the board just now. If the comments are available, I think they're also on the CCNSO website. You can download them there. So if you want to have the details, it's a five-page document, and you're very welcome. If you have questions about this, I'm happy to answer them later or now. Can I have the next slide, Gary? So the other activity is the new five-year strategic plan. We are in a joint strategy conversation phase two. I think you will all remember that during the opening ceremony in Beijing, Fadi showed us a video, and there were certain areas where the community was asked to provide feedback on. As SOP, we did so. The feedback I gave to ICANN was that we haven't received any comments on what we submitted. And without any tangible product of the first round of the strategic conversation, there's now a second round where we have eight key points where the community is asked to provide input on. I think that quite a few of you have participated in the session that we had on Monday morning where we had these working groups. My personal opinion is that it's applaudable that ICANN in this way seeks really, in all different kinds of ways, community input. I think on the other hand, there's a risk that ICANN and the ICANN board give the impression that they don't have a clear vision themselves because there's just open questions. And we were supposed to get a framework somewhere in June, and as you can see from the coming soon, it's not going to be June. I wonder if it's going to be July. So somewhere probably between now and October, there will be a first strategic framework that will be the first tangible product on the strategic plan for the community. We will continue the discussion on the strategy in Buenos Aires. And if the rest of the schedule is still intact, then the final strategic plan, high-level document, 6 to 10 pages, will be approved in January next year. We heard the board comment on this, the fact that it will be a high-level document, that there will be a three-year operating plan with expense and revenue forecasts for the same period. I think that's a very good improvement compared to the present situation, but I think it will still take some time for them to deliver this. Okay, so that's where we are. I don't know if there are any questions from the room or members of the working group that want to add to what I just said. Pierre.
So maybe while the mic is circulating, can I remind you that you should have three cards, which is green for yes, red for no, and orange for I'm not sure. It might be really helpful to the thinking of the SOP to test whether there is general support for the direction of your comments and whether, for example, the concern about the cost increase is shared. I suspect the answer to that might be yes, but I thought I'd just test that you're all awake and have your cards. If you want to pose some questions.
So are we going to post it in a positive way? Will everybody who is in agreement with the comments on the direction of our comments put up the green card, or would you say everybody who disagrees put up a red card? Well, let's see if everybody's awake. So green cards, if you agree with the general direction of the comments of the SOP on the drafts. Okay, that's good. Anybody who wants to stick up a red card and make a point of his or her personal vision on this issue?
Or anyone orange and not sure, or not had the time to read the comments?
It's definitely also the case with certain people.
That's really helpful to know. Right. Sorry, could you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, thank you, Leslie. Pierre from AFNIC.fr. So first of all, thank you very much for this update. I have a question regarding the announcement made by FADI yesterday morning on the creation of the five committee. It's not very clear to me the link between these five new committees and the final strategic plan. There was the idea that they would give input to the strategic plan, but I don't know if you had more explanations about that or understand the scope of their collaboration with the other mechanisms about the strategic plan.
I regret to say that I haven't so far. No. I don't know, Leslie, if you can.
I may have only just slightly more, which is my interpretation of what has been said so far, has been that these five groups replace the previous President's Strategy Committee, and the President's Strategy Committee was tasked with looking at the environment that ICANN was operating in going ahead and getting some high-level inputs. And my understanding of what he's trying to do is divide that out into sections. And I see the interaction with the SOP in terms of the SOP, I hope very much, being able to channel the CCNSO inputs into each of those areas and most certainly to then comment on the output of a draft strategic plan. I don't know if that helps, but that's as I understand it currently. Maybe it'll be clearer soon. Okay, anyone else? All right, if there's not, can I suggest then we use the opportunity to move back to the financial contributions discussion? Yes, if we could get those slides back up. And I abruptly ceased the queue when I know Zedong was ready to speak from Sien Nick. Did you want to comment just while we're setting up the slides? And we'll open up for general comments and questions from our earlier session too.
Did that work?
Yeah, okay. It's only from Tassien. I'm sorry, I think maybe I have missed some discussion about the financial working group. So I just have some comment. The first one, you know, I just think about the benefit and the contribution. You know, in some sense, I want to second the comment of Andre. You know, for the contribution, you know, in some sense, the CCTRD registry make contribution to the ICANN community, not only to pay the money to ICANN, but also they try to host the meeting and host the root servers and other activities to make it a benefit for the local community. And for the contribution, I just review the table even released in the ICANN website. I think it's... I just wonder if it is necessary to calculate the contribution by per CCTRD registry. It's not by per CCTRD. You know, for example, there's also have IDN CCTRD. It's for .cn, you know, that's .china in Chinese. So Cynic make contribution to ICANN by .cn and also give contribution by .china. So in some sense, I prefer maybe we can calculate the contribution by CCTRD registry. Maybe they will run one or two or three. I know that for Singapore or other registry, they run a lot of IDN CCTRD. So it's my second comment. So for the contribution, I also prefer we can consider the different kind of contribution. We should make sure that, you know, for the CCTRD registry pay money to ICANN and they want to get a benefit for the local community. You know, for the ecosystem, you know, the CCTRD registry charge money for per domain, and they, for them for Cynic, we also return money and return the benefit to the local community for different kind of activities. We should make sure that the contribution to ICANN can return to the community in some kind of ways. So that's why I mentioned, you know, the contribution, including the money, the hosting meeting, hosting root server, hosting different kind of activities for the community.
Thanks for the comment. Or comments, actually. So maybe I'll take sort of the notion of the work that individual CCs do in their own environments and how is that tackled. So that as I heard the question or the comment, that question was in there. And that's where we really tried to capture in the three categories between specific, shared, and then global. Global was the category that in the early parts of this discussion was by far the largest number. And I'd actually, maybe you recall, having been an ICANN person during the Rod days, where he was putting forward the number of 10 to 12 million that this community should contribute. The bulk of that $10 to $12 million number was in the global category, not the specific or shared ones. And that's where I think we made the greatest progress on this debate of that notion of the value exchange, which, you know, I think is what we're trying to capture that you're asking about in your comments or question, where we as a community do a lot of things for the benefit of the ecosystem in our domestic environments, and that needs to be captured somehow. And by getting ICANN to agree that we will not pay any dollars towards the global operations of ICANN because of the work that we do on the ground in our domestic environments, they stepped back from making demands in that category. And I think that's where we have to, as I said earlier, it's not going to be precise, and there's 140 of us, and we can't end up having 140 calculations on what each of us do in our domestic environments. We're trying to find a framework and set of guidelines that are reasonably applicable to us all, and the way we addressed the your comments is by getting ICANN to agree that, yes, we do a lot of work, and therefore, no, we will not charge accordingly. Right. Two other pieces around IDNs in particular, or running multiple registries, which is not just running IDNs, because there are some operators who run multiple registries on behalf of other countries. So there's different situations where that plays out, and then on the different types of models. I absolutely agree, and we as a working group thought about, you know, operators who run IDNs as well as ASCII TLDs. You know, how do we work with that? What about operators who run multiple TLDs on behalf of other countries? AFNIC is a good example of that, who runs, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think about 6 TLDs on behalf of other countries. If you look at the last bullet point here, that's where we tried to provide guidance but give flexibility on how a CC would approach that particular question. So there is guidance on it, or guidelines, but there's still considerable flexibility for a CC to work with their particular instance. And then in terms of the specific, so I heard 3 real comments issues, correct me if I'm wrong, and then the next one was around the model, and could there be more individual models, et cetera. And we looked, you know, we did look at a range of them. In fact, in the early days of this working group, that's what we were focused on. We reviewed sort of 8 different types, although some were sort of subset types, but let's say 5 differing models, and including, you know, taking guidance from some of the regional organizations, the way they work, or the numbering organizations, fee-for-service models, et cetera. And the challenge, of course, with so many different business and governance models in this room is it's very difficult to find one that is crisply going to address every situation. And that's where we came to the notion that, you know, at the banded model based on domains is one of the few universally applicable benchmarks that we all share. It has worked more or less since 2006. It's the current regime that we have. And that really it was going to be the best solution across a relatively heterogeneous set of business models. So is it perfect? No. Is there a better one? A la Churchill and democracy, it's a lousy form of government, but it's the best one tried, perhaps. That's how we got to the model, though we did examine a number of them.
Thank you, Baron. I wonder if a way to think about this is to separate the two issues, because I know from my own registry point of view, I think the model is as good as anything. I don't like the sum. I wonder if there are other registries in a similar position. So is it the end answer we don't like, but we could live with some model that shares out? Or do we disagree with both of those? It would be useful to understand. Okay. I had Hero, then Sabine.
Hi, Hero from JP. Maybe it's already mentioned, but I think just recommending the table is a little bit dangerous in some scenario. I think it's better for us to add a column to the table showing the projected lower bound of the sum of our contributions when we recommend this table. The most dangerous about possible scenario with the recommended bans, maybe like this. Registries who now pay more than the table sets will pay exactly the amount of the table, and registries who now pay less than the table, including zero payment, will remain the same amount as possible. The sum will be less than the current status. It's possible, logically, at least. So we need to have some means to carefully avoid such situation, although it may be hypothetical. Thank you.
I think you know the basic statement that you made is correct. It is possible. I mean, there is a mathematical possibility that that could happen. Certainly my hope is that over the 2.5 to 3 years we've been at this, we've taken input, provided updates, taken feedback, worked with a fairly large working group that, again, you know, as we've said, people may not love this solution, but there's a general acceptance that we have to pay some number more and that this is a reasonable number and that it's a reasonable allocation of it. And then it will be up to ICANN to work with the individual CCs to actually collect on that or encourage the CCs to live with the guidelines. You're right, it's theoretically possible. I don't think it would play out that way. And certainly in my conversations with numerous, albeit not everybody, but numerous individual operators and one-on-one conversations, plus the feedback that we've had, my sense is that most, not all, most could live with this. And that's really what we're trying to get to.
Okay. Sorry, excuse me. So I think there's three bits I ought to highlight that I know the working group spent some time ensuring were in the debate and have come out finally as well, which is the big voluntary word. And I know it doesn't apply to the CCs that are contracted to ICANN, but for many, voluntary is extremely important. There is also the phasing word. So for CCs that this represents a significant increase for, we certainly discussed over what kind of time frame would CCs, if they chose to voluntary increase, how long? So I think the 3 to 5 years is in there for that reason. And also you'll have heard us repeating the value exchange words. And that's very important for us with the ICANN board and also with many others in the ICANN community who have taken a view that the CCs are not paying their way as they see it. To recognise that the CCs bring value to the ICANN multi-stakeholder model, and that has doesn't have a pound sign or a dollar sign over it, but is absolutely crucial to this too. We had Sabine next.
Yes, Sabine here. I really appreciate the voluntary model, and as a registry paying since 2000 voluntarily each year, I think that's quite fair to say. I have a big problem with I have a great sympathy for the bandit model, which is fair enough. I think that's important. I have a huge issue with recommending the people putting into bands according to the amount of top-level domains and according to the amount of domains under management. Because I don't think that's really that's the point, or it covers the point. Because when you look at the UN, how they collect their money, if you look at the ITU, how they collect their money, they look much more on wealthiness, infrastructure, people served. And if you compare, let's say, the amount of domains from if we really look what we receive from ICANN, we receive each and everybody a service for one domain. And so the amount of domains delegated is actually something which is concerns in our business model, which has something to do with the amount of people we are serving, but it has also something to do about the model we choose. So if you compare the island of Tokelau, small island in the middle of Pacific, I think, and Germany, it's a huge difference, but we have a similar amount of domains. I don't refuse to pay in a large band, not at all. But I will never be allowed to be sorted in a large band according to the amount of domains we are under management. Because I think we are serving a large community, because I think we are a wealthy country. And I think that is something which, if you look at the on the UN level, that is possibly something you can look at. You can say about the amount of people you are serving, the amount of the wealthiness of the country, if you want to need to give guidance. But I would definitely refuse to pay a license fee for the domains under management. Never, ever.
How do you really feel, Sabina? And all I can say to that, Sabina, is fair enough. We had conversations not dissimilar to that within the working group. There are certainly folks within the working group who advocated against a banded model. But again, at the end of the day, when we looked at the complexity or equity of a significant number of models, this in the end was the most universally applicable. And I'll just come to a couple of points. There is a strong correlation between the size of the registry as measured by domains under management and revenue. It's not perfect, but it's probably the strongest correlation of any of the possible measurements. And like any issue, if you look specifically and only to the outlying situations, it becomes almost impossible to find a conclusion. So while there is a small island in the Pacific that has 15 million domains that they give away for free, that's not necessarily what we should be basing our entire model on or hanging our collective hats on. So yes, I recognize there are outliers. We as a working group recognize there are outliers. And as we've said, this isn't perfect for all situations, but it is the strong common denominator for us. And while not perfect, it's the strongest correlation between potentially capacity to pay and any other factor.
Okay, Patricia?
Hi, Patricia Poblete, Nick Chile. Warren, I believe that if you are looking for a variable that has even stronger correlation, if you had access to that information, which you probably don't, I think that variable would be not registry revenue, but registry expenses. Because if you are giving a million domain names for free, still it takes money to run that registry, and a lot of money. And you certainly have some business model that covers for all those expenses. And adding a small fraction on top of that should be feasible for whoever's running that to manage. Okay, so I think if you look at things from that point of view, even if you do not have access to that information, that gives you a better view of how to fit everybody into the model, not just those that generate actual income.
Yeah, and you know what? I completely agree with your comment. And we looked at that. You know, could we tie it to revenue? Could we tie it to expenses, recognizing the comment you just made? The problem with that, of course, is we simply can't get access to all of that. So having a model where we can't get access to the data, while theoretically superior, becomes practically unworkable. And that was one of the challenges with that model.
But even if you had access to the data, it would also depend on the accounting policies of the country in question as to how they displayed their expenditure and what they capitalized, for example.
Yep. But if I may, what I would say to that is that if we're talking about a voluntary model, self-selecting of the bands, then it's up to you to decide which band you fit in, and you know what your expenses are.
Fair comment. You know, like Leslie just said, and like we looked at, you know, it had to be a practical solution as well, and the challenge there was actually getting access to the data. Whereas the one thing we can all get access to as a community, where there will be some peer pressure as well, let's face it, is the domain name data is available to everybody in a consistently applied methodology.
Sorry, Nigel.
Thank you. Please bear with me. My voice is still playing up, although it's improving slightly. Two points, first of all. There is a difference, and I think you've conflated the two, between a model based on a banded system, which is voluntary to pay, and mandatorily based on the number of domain names under management, and a model which is self-selected, as, for example, Centre uses. I just want to make that clear and to see what it is that's under management here, under consideration here, because if it's based entirely on domain names under management, then it's approaching something like a tax on e-commerce in your country. The second thing is that for some CCTLDs, which for other reasons have a very, very live and vibrant second-level market, and such as where we are now and also the UK, the number of domain names under management is less than 20.
I remember my predecessor advancing exactly the same argument circa 12 years ago. I think from a UK perspective, we accept there has to be some methodology, and the words voluntary give us some comfort. The methodology doesn't take into account ability to pay, and I'm very much aware from, you know, the range of models and the range of financial outturns we have in this room that there are some who do not have the ability to pay, and there are equally some who do have the ability to pay and are not paying. We all the committee was tasked with doing was finding some basis on which to make a division. It's really not perfect. We're not advancing it as a perfect methodology, it has to be said.
And if I could just make a comment on the notion of tax, because I'd like to dispel that. This is not a tax. Taxes aren't voluntary. This is strictly voluntary. Taxes are prescriptive, specific, and most definitely mandatory. This is guidance and voluntary and a range. So I want to make sure that, I mean, I take your point metaphorically, but let's just be clear, this is nowhere near a tax or a domain name tax. I just want to strike that from the conversation per se.
I appreciate that. And just to clarify exactly my point is that a self-selected banding system is one that's worked extremely well in Centre for many years, and a self-selected banding system is one that we'd be happy with. But just the way it's been coming over, the way Sabina was talking, that, you know, you have so many domain names under management, you must pay X. That's kind of uncomfortable.
Okay, true. And you know, I will keep, you'll get bored of this, but I'm going to keep cycling back to word number one, and the whole thing is voluntary. And we're making suggestions using a proxy that's universally applicable, as best as there is available, while not perfect. But that gives us common ground from which to work. And it's voluntary, and you can, you know, you're free to up it or do something different. But this, I think, is a reasonable set of guidelines that we can live with. And we'll end, let's not forget, at the end of the day, deliver the result that we're trying to achieve. Because, like I said, that matrix, it's a pretty simple equation. There's only a few variables to play with here. So if we have notionally agreed that ICANN expends the number they do, which that's one thing within the working group we have pretty universal agreement on, then that number in the bottom right has to get divvied up some way. And there are only so many ways to do that, and so many variables to play with, so many dials to work with. So that's how we've gotten here.
Okay. Bill, could I remind people to introduce themselves, though, please?
This is Bill Manning, and I haven't been an active CCNSO participant for a few years, but...
Welcome back, Bill.
A question arises about the assumption of equitable value of any registered name. If you simply count the number of registrations and use that as your basis, there is a difference in the actual value of, and I'm going to use com because I can, between google.com and karoshi.com. If Google disappeared, there would be many people who would think that there was value that went away. If Karoshi.com goes away, I'm the only one that's really going to be concerned. And so is there any thought been given to not only the number of names under administration, but to the perceived value of those names as part of this particular set of equations?
To be perfectly blunt, not a lot. There was some brief discussion, but not a lot. And the primary reason for that is within this community, generally speaking, we don't differentiate our pricing based on the perceived secondary market value of a domain name. So, you know, for example, .cas are $850, whether it's Byron.ca, which I think should have a lot of value, but probably is only worth $850, or the Royal Bank of Canada, one of the number one sites. I mean, we still charge $850, and therefore our capacity to pay does not vary depending on the secondary market's subjective valuation of a domain name. So that's how we got there. But to be fair, we didn't spend a lot of time on that particular question. Any other further comments or questions or feedback? So maybe we could dare I ask for some feedback via the cards. And maybe I'll just start with the comfort level with the actual numbers here, and based on what we've been able to provide and ICANN and the commentary that we've made, are we comfortable that 3.5 million is a reasonable representation of ICANN's expenditure against this community, or on behalf of this community? If I could get a green, red, orange, are we okay with that? We'll share that one. Okay, so A material majority on green with a few oranges and a single red back there somewhere. Is that Giovanni? Okay. So that was a you confused red with green? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so clearly, I mean, in that for that question on this, certainly a significant majority for green, but some reservations with orange, definitely. Okay, thank you. I also just want to point out, and Leslie reminds me, we are going to be putting this question to the council in the Buenos Aires meeting. In the interim, we will be publishing this and asking us, this community, for further feedback and commentary to see if there's anything, you know, that we can continue to refine or update. Sabina?
I have one procedural question. Due to which a regulation that is in the remit of the council to decide upon that recommendation? Is it in the bylaws regulated that the CCNSO council is responsible for coming up with proposals on that, and on which? Or is it not, as far as I understand, a sort of a direct relationship between the CCTLD and that kind of coming up with something on that?
Well, at the end of the day, as we've stated very specifically in the guidelines and principles, as we've made very specifically clear, any arrangement is specifically between ICANN and the CC. So that's one of the core principles.
Yeah, but the question is still a procedural question. Who should come
up with
the
recommendation? Well, there was two questions there. I'm just answering. Right, I'm answering one.
CCNSO members.
So I'm answering one question, which is just to reaffirm the fact that no matter what we say as a set of principles and guidelines, it is a one-to-one relationship between ICANN and a voluntary contribution of any given CC.
Sabine, I understand your direction of travel. 5 years down the line, it's ever so late to ask about the bylaw area. So this working group was chartered and so on some time ago. I think what the council will do is will be asked, I suspect, to support the work of the working group and the recommendations of the working group. And I think that is within the role of the council. It's voluntary. Members will have a choice as to whether they accept those recommendations in the model or not.
Yeah, maybe I may add to that that on several occasions, Byron has, on the basis of the progress he had made and the plans that the working group had for the coming period, asked the community, this community, if he was on the right track and if they wanted them to proceed. And there was always a confirmation. You've always proceeded on the confirmation from the community that you were on the right track and that we wanted you to proceed. So I think it's a bit too late now to go back to the start and say, should we ever have started doing this?
I have no issue with the recommendation itself, but the question is actually, who acknowledged the result of the recommendation? Is it the CCNSO, or is it the membership, or is it the council?
I think Bart is poised to give us procedural guidance.
It does work. At the end of the day, it will be the council in this case because it's not a PDP. That's one. So the working group will report back to the council and the council will adopt the recommendation or not. If the membership feels that, say, the decision of the council is questionable, then according to the rules of the CCNSO itself, it can call for a vote among the members. And going back to say when it started, this process was started to replace the guidelines from 2007, I believe. So that procedure is applicable to this one as well.
And I guess the PDP route would have been of equal length, but importantly, the PDP route would have meant it was then binding on CCNSO members.
And this one is excluded from the PDP.
Correct.
At all. So this will never be a PDP, hence it will only be a guideline from the council, and it is not enforceable by the CCNSO or doesn't make a difference. It's just out there to guide behaviour of the individual CCTLDs in the sense of not being enforceable or anything else.
Did you want to come back on that, Sabine? Okay. Byron.
So the next question I would like to ask, fundamentally what we have arrived at is an evolution of the current model, which has had at least tacit acceptance since 2006-2007. What I'd like to ask is, can we get a sense of, as a community, do we feel that this is an equitable model or a reasonable model given the facts that we have? So we have looked at a number of them, but is this a reasonable model that we can live with? Green for yes, I can live with it. Doesn't mean you love it, I can live with it. Red for no way. Orange for eh, I can live with it, but I don't like it. Okay. So, just if you didn't turn around and look, it was a majority of green, definitely a couple of reds, and a few oranges scattered about. Rolof?
So Rolof, and I was also going to ask the guys at the front here who raised what I think was reds, that the lighting's not particularly good in here. If you haven't spoken, if we can understand the concern, that would be really helpful. Rolof?
Yeah, maybe I should go and sit down in the room because it's not as SOP's chair, but from my position with SIDN. I raised the green card because I can live with this model. I think it's pretty reasonable. But there, from my side, there's a condition, and that is that we're in the highest band. We've been paying considerable amounts over the last years, and we expected to increase our contributions. And that's the bit where the outcome of the whole procedure will determine if I can live with the model or not, because if there's only a few of us that will either raise their contribution according to the fee band they're in or start contributing according to the fee band that they are in, then it will still be... it will still not be a solution to the problem that we were facing, and it will just be a few of us increasing their contributions. And if that is the case, then I will be very reluctant to do so.
So I don't know if you need to class all of the forecast.
Yeah, so it is something that we have to do together, or otherwise it won't work. That's my point.
I completely agree with your point. It only works if we... generally speaking, participate. You know, and that's the way, at the end of the day, the way I looked at it, and I think many of the working group members looked at it, do we have numbers that we can rely on? Are they reasonable? ICANN has finally come forward with them. They're reliable, consistently reproduced, and at the very least, not unreasonable. If you buy that, then you have a number. We only have so many CCs here. How do we distribute that number equitably? There are only so many proxy metrics we can use. In fact, there are remarkably few that are universally applicable to us all. Find the proxy number, and then how do you distinguish how to use that proxy metric? And there, again, are relatively few ways to do that. So that flow of logic leads to a conclusion where there are very few possible outcomes, and this is the primary outcome. And it's not a revolution. It's an evolution of what we are living with right now that is reasonable. And I think that as long as we can all, or the vast majority, buy into that, then we will address Roloff's question, which is fair and which certainly I agree with.
Philip from Belgium.be. I raised the orange because I agree with the model, with the bands, but I'm trying to understand the rationale behind the different bands and also the fees that are attached to each band, so that's why I'm put up orange. Because I have the impression, if I do some quick calculations, that some bands, sometimes if you calculate the price per domain in the bands, sometimes it goes up per domain, and then it goes down again, and then it goes up again. So I'm trying to understand that. If you look at band B and C, for instance, and you look at the amount and the minimum and the maximum, then you go to 7.5 US dollar cents per domain in band C and $6 in band B, and it goes down again in D and E. So I'm wondering, why is there a peak for band C, for instance, which is coincidentally the band we happen to be in?
Well, that's exactly why I did it that way, because I knew you were in that one.
Thank you.
This isn't, if you look at, I mean, this is getting granular, but if you look at the column that's the number of CCs in a band, that doesn't give us a good and smooth distribution, right? So we don't have a bell curve. We don't have a linear curve or an even distribution across those numbers. So it does make it challenging to do what you're suggesting, which is like some progressive rate that, let's say, gets lower with volume. That's probably where, you know, the natural inclination is where there would be a progressive rate that gets lower with volume in some way, shape, or form. And more or less, that is what happens. But it's a bit bumpy on the way down that curve, I agree. And in part, the other factor that you've got to layer on to that is, okay, how we do that still has to deliver the bottom right number given a lumpy, unequal distribution of CCs in any given category. So yes, a perfect smooth distribution would probably be easier to sit up here and defend, but the math and the equation works such that it has to be a little lumpy. But it's still within the realm of reasonable in terms of a general, I mean, I even hate to say the words, cost per domain, because that's not what it is. It's a band, it's voluntary, but based on the number of players in each category, it does get a little choppy on its way out to being cheaper at great volumes. Is that explanation enough?
Microphone. And we need you on the finance working group. Clearly, you have math skills.
So I just wanted to mention that the extra amount for us that you're asking, that equals our total travel budget for the year to come to ICANN meetings. So we can just give the money to ICANN and then stay relaxed at home. That's an option too, of course.
Thank you, Philip. I had Youngham, and then I was going to invite whoever it was in the front row that also raised an orange or a red. If you'd like to be able to contribute your comments, that would be really appreciated. Youngham.
Adding to the question, my guess for the reason why it peaks in band C is because there are some CCs in band C that have a different kind of an arrangement with ICANN than others, and KR is also in that band, so we are especially interested in that. And so my guess is that there is the there are the CCs that have a different kind of an arrangement with ICANN. Would that be a...
You're right. And the other thing, just from a pure math point of view, let's not forget if you're at the very top of one band versus the very bottom of the next, that gives you the choppiness too. So your number is very dependent on the assumption that you're using there, because the bands are wide enough that being at the bottom or the top will certainly make a material difference. But again, it's a band and it's guidance, and that's what we're trying to also give is flexibility within that, or that's what we're trying to suggest.
Okay. Well done. Thank you.
Hello. I'm Chode from .zm. I've been following the discussion, and I'm not clear on whether we're using the word voluntary truthfully, because could you consider making which band you fall in voluntary as well, as opposed to fixing that one? Because it seems like it's mandatory on that case and then voluntary thereafter, so it kind of takes away from the voluntary. That's just an opinion, but I'm prepared to change to green if you convince me.
Well, certainly, and we had this discussion many times in the working group, we have tried to stress the voluntary nature of this everywhere we can, from the titles to, like I said, word one is voluntary. So, you know, we believe that in the presentation, in the discussions with even just at the ICANN board, certainly with senior staff, who at the end of the day, that's who we're, quote, doing the deal with the senior staff of ICANN, that has been stressed every single time. If we go back to the principles, it speaks to that very specifically and speaks to the fact that the relationship will still be governed one-to-one with ICANN, and ICANN recognizes the flexibility that the CC has to come to that conclusion. So, I mean, I feel that within the documents and the words, the language, the vocabulary we've used in conversation and in print, that there can be no mistaking the voluntary nature of this. And that we've given bands so that people have flexibility even within a, you know, between ranges and have space and time in any given range to grow their registry while still maintaining a relatively stable payment. So I don't know if that specifically convinces you to go green, but I am convinced that there is no misunderstanding that this is a voluntary regime.
Okay, Nigel?
Finally, very quickly, the reason of also being on the front row and having waved an orange, the reason I waved an orange was exactly the same reason as the previous speaker. So I won't rehearse what he said. But in your answer to him, you said you have stressed over and over again the voluntary nature of this. To me, it seems the more you stress the voluntary nature of this, the more you're trying to distract from the non-voluntary nature of the banding mechanism. And I think if you were to stress the self-selecting nature of the banding mechanism more and the voluntary nature less, I'd be more happy to wave green.
Thank you. I will.
But some of us still want voluntary as word one on the principles.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a fair comment. We had some much stronger views on the working group, too. About not making it mandatory, but much closer to that, much harder, name and shame. I mean, we had that whole side of the spectrum all the way to it should be wide open, do whatever you want, and we've tried to find the common ground, the rough consensus here. But yeah, there were much harder positions on the working group as well.
Annabeth.
Thank you. I think that one of the things that worries people here in this room is that even if it's voluntary, it might be a difficult talk between the CEO and the ICANN staff when they are discussing what they should pay. Because even if it's voluntary, it's still a kind of, you call it recommendation, and it's very easy to at least think that they will use it as a kind of pressure to get more money out of those that, who won't pay that much. So one thing perhaps at least is to, instead of call it recommendations, call it a form of guidelines. So I think that this word is a little looser than recommended. And another thing is that it should be quite easy to go somewhere between or inside this number here. So if you have, even if you choose a band, if you have 1 million instead of 2.5 million, you're so close to the lower band that it's easy to say that, okay, I'll pay 50. That's more than enough, because I'm not 2.5. And then you can move within the band as well. I think that's my comment, yeah.
You raised something that we actually wrestled with, and even just as recently as in our Sunday meeting, the specific choice of words. You know, the shall versus should versus could versus wills, and all of those kinds of words, as well as recommendations and guidelines. We use recommendations after some discussion because that's what we currently live with. If you look at what the recommendations are today, the regime we live under today, recommend is the word used consistently throughout. And that's, as we tried to have an evolution as opposed to a revolution, that's why we used recommend, because it was consistent with what we have today. So I take your point. That's how we came to recommend, recognizing that it is a little stronger than a guideline, but it's still just a recommend. You can take that recommendation and say, thank you very much, and I'll go about my own business.
Okay. I have the gentleman at the mic, and then Nigel.
Hello. Dmitry Kochmanek, .ua. You know, I have two comments on the table. First, I just don't see how their contribution makes sense at all. I see that top level of each band is essentially double of the previous one, except the lowest. So it's a quarter million, half million, million, 2 million, 5 million. Then when I look at the contributions, again, excepting the very lower one, which is obviously just the cheap, then first it goes from 10 to 15, which is like 50% up. Then it's 15 to 25. Then it jumps three times. Then it jumps twice. Then it jumps less. So the scale, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I know you can play with those numbers to fit into the same, just my first comment. So I just don't see how the numbers, they really look arbitrary. So if the goal is to have average, you know, kind of fee, right, comparing to the genus of fee per domain name, right, to be about the same, like if you have double the number of domains, if fee goes up, so the load is the same, then that goal is not there. Second contribution, our current payment is about 10 times less than the one proposed. We can probably double that. My question to you is that, would you rather have members who don't pay at all, or members who pay, you know, I'd say quarter of what the proposed fee is voluntarily? Because the word guideline can mean two things, either pay that or not, or pay something, preferably something around this. Likewise, if somebody feels like they should be paying more, you know, is it a good thing for them to do? You know, I really don't see what the word guideline means here, because otherwise we can just say, let's pay just a, you know, quarter dollar per domain you delegate, similarly to the genius host, you know, for .com. You know, it says a guideline. And then the CC utility manager would just choose the amount based on the domains they have, right? I think that kind of guideline would be much simpler to achieve. And then, as we know the total number of domains delegated, it's very easy to estimate revenue. You see what I'm saying? It would be much easier, and no bans.
We certainly had a conversation about essentially a fee per domain, and that, for a variety of reasons, historical and otherwise, was pretty much universally not acceptable. So in terms of, does it make the math easier? Does it, you know, is it more predictable? Yes to all of those. I would say for historical, cultural, taxation reasons, there was no appetite to go down that road. So that's the why, whether you agree with that or not. That's how we got there, and that was definitely one of the things that seemed to have almost unanimity within the working group. As far as the choppiness within the curve, I mean, I more or less addressed that to previously. But the other thing to recommend or to remember is, as we work this equation, we're not just going forward and trying to find the solution. We're backing into a number. And when I said there's only so many dials to play with, right, part of it is trying to find, using the variables that we had, the right outcome, which is 3.5. So that's why it's not a consistently perfect curve, because part of it is going, well, what we do over here in the variables has to get to that bottom right number. So that's one of the reasons it's a little choppier than you might ideally like.
Look, no, I hear what you're saying.
Going to just saying, okay, it's 2 cents per or whatever the number is.
I just call those numbers completely random, sorry. You know, you can have them linear or you can have them random, but this one is not any scale at all. It's just really arbitrary. So, I mean, I think I'll give the mic.
Okay. We'll agree to disagree on that. I hear what you're saying. It's not arbitrary because we're backing into a number and trying to get to a specific place.
Okay. So I had Nigel and then Giovanni.
Well, I want to agree 100% with what Byron said about the use of the word recommendation, but I would advise caution. I'm a native English speaker. I understood exactly what you said about recommendation in your answer to Annabet. But I agree with Annabet. She's right. There is, in linguistics, a concept of deceptive cognates or false friends. Recommendation does not mean recommendation in other languages. Recommendation is binding in some contexts. I'll give you an example, ITUT radio regulations. It's a recommendation, but it's binding internationally. So we need to be careful that we don't use a word that can be either deliberately or accidentally interpreted in a different way to that in which we intend it.
I think this must be an English speaker's foible, because I was the person who discussed the meaning of would and should and could and stuff. Sorry, Byron, I leaped in.
No, and we got down to the native English speakers arguing about the nuances of individual words, and guideline and recommendation is one. And you raise an excellent point that should be clearly addressed, and I come to it as a native English speaker, so I have in my mind what that means, and that's an unfair advantage, I guess, when you're talking about the nuances of an English word. Without a doubt, my perspective, our perspective, was a recommendation is not binding. Full stop. On the continuum of strength of the words, a recommendation is stronger than a guideline, but it is not mandatory and not binding. That's where I come from on that, on the specific word. And that's where the working group was coming from, too, just to be clear on that word.
Okay. Giovanni, do you have Italian addition to the interpretation of recommendation?
No, I don't. And I already moved from red to orange, so eventually in the late afternoon I can go to green, but no, that will not happen. I would like, first of all, to acknowledge the work of this working group, because I remember my infancy in the ICANN environment, and it was exactly 10 years ago when I was working for the .IT, and there was the first CCNSO meeting at the ICANN room, and apart from all the logistic issues, I still remember there were people discussing very, you know, let's say, toughly in the corridors about the CCTLD contributions to ICANN, and that was exactly 10 years ago, as well as about the IANA service responsiveness. So those two topics were in the heart and soul of the CCTLD community 10 years ago. Now I see that it's still you know, quite a hard topic to discuss and to digest, and therefore I understand that the approach of the working group is an approach that tries to, you know, find a sort of compromise in what is a quite difficult topic to sort out. At the same time, again, I don't want to get into, as I'm not a English mother tongue, I don't want to get into the recommendation or guideline, what you mean for that. I know what it means in Italian. I know what the Italian government sometimes means with that. So I just like to say that I don't know how this is going to be presented to the CCNSO Council or to ICANN staff. My recommendation in both the UK and the Italian sense of the word would be to have a paragraph or something in the preamble before presenting this table, which we see now on the screen, saying that because of the complexity and variety of the CCTLD ecosystem, what is presented as recommended may not suit specific CCTLDs. So that's my input to this discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Giovanni. That's good input. And just to pick up on one of the points you made there, in terms of having some preamble, whatever the final document takes shape as, it is absolutely envisioned to have some preamble and a very short history that, as an independent document that goes out into the wild, would be self-sustaining and allow the reader to actually get the picture of it. So it would have very, very short history and some of the preamble, and I like your suggestion there. So that absolutely will happen.
Okay. Patricia?
Patricia Boblete. I can understand that from a point of view of being this acceptable to people, it is just not feasible to talk about a certain number of dollars or cents per domain. But on the other hand, that serves as a guideline to compare against what's being proposed. And from that point of view, I can understand the concern of some people who just do the math and feel that they are contributing on a per-domain basis much more than other people from one band to the other. And in that sense, what I would like to ask is, are these numbers final, or can they be fixed somehow? Are they negotiable?
Well, I'm not selling a used car here, but as I said earlier, you know, this is the first really fulsome presentation on what I think are close to, at the very least, close to the final bands. But, you know, as I said, we will be publishing this and seeking further comment. So if there is a math genius out there who can create the perfect curve, given the constraints, then I'm certainly open to it. We're certainly open to it as a working group.
Okay. Any further questions or views or interpretations of recommendations? No? In which case, can you join me in thanking Byron and the working group and the SOP working group both very active working groups, I know. I am somehow on both of them. But I think an incredibly important milestone has been reached today. We may not all be entirely comfortable with it, but it is indeed big progress. So thank you both. Okay, so we are heading into our lunch shortly. Lunch was very kindly sponsored by NIRA, the .ng registry. And I understand, I'm afraid I don't know him, we have Mr. B. Aladpibo, or something like that, who was going to address us. I don't know if he is in the room. Excellent. Well, I'm so sorry I didn't know how to pronounce your surname. So whilst he's coming up, let me just remind you about lunch. After the presentation from .ng, there will be lunch tickets at the back of the room. There are 120 lunch tickets, so I think we have enough for everybody this time, which is great, and thank you so much for your sponsorship. Lunch itself will be at the Durban Upper Arena foyer, which those of you that did the cocktails with the board yesterday, it's the same location. It is a bit of a hike. It's right down past where we were with the board and up a level. So we will allow sufficient time for you to get there and then to get back for our afternoon session. And again, to fill in whilst they're setting up, we restart this afternoon with the GAC, so we are not back here, first of all. We are due to meet with the GAC at 2:15, at 14:15, and the GAC are in Hall 4AB. Okay, so that's 2:15 with the GAC, Hall 4AB. How are we doing? I'll carry on. So to the GAC, we're going to talk about the IDN PDP, the framework of interpretation work, the study group on the use of country names, and also how we can better work together with the GAC, a similar theme to a discussion we had with the GNSO Council and the CCNSO Council. How can we make best use of our time together at ICANN meetings? I'm going to run out of waffle in a minute. Welcome to the .ng registry.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Adebiyi Oladipo. I know that will be a bit difficult for some people, but it's okay. I'm just so used to it. But if you try a little bit, you might just be able to pronounce it. All right. I'm sitting here representing the Nigerian Internet Registration Association, NIRA. We're the Nigeria's CCTLD, and we're very happy to be associated with the CCNSO, and also to show that we're sponsoring the lunch today. We've also partaken of lunch sponsored by others, so I think it's time for us to also contribute. Thank you. Okay. I think we had an opportunity to give an update in at the ICON 44 in Dakar. And after that, a number of things have happened, and we just think that we should also give updates on happenings within the registry. So I'm not going to take your time. I actually wanted to show a video, but it's not coming up, so we're going to leave it, and then we'll go straight into our presentation. Just a little bit of background for those who are not so used to our story. Our story has been very interesting, and over the years, I think the chair and all the other, some other people within the room would understand what our story. But over the years, a number of things have changed, and there's been redelegation and a proper management structure for the .ng has been put in place. And that's what gave birth to the Nigerian Internet Registration Association. It's a multi-stakeholder organization which comprises of representatives from the government of the of Nigeria, different stakeholder organizations within the IT and the internet community within Nigeria. Looking at the governance structure, we try as much as possible to make it multi-stakeholder. There's a general assembly, which is membership-based. We also have a board of trustees, which gives oversight to the management of the CCTLD, of our CCTLD. We have executive board members, some of whom are around in this room. I'm one of the executive board members. And then we have some permanent staff who act as the operating entities within the organization. The organization is not for profit, and it was deliberately made so as to have inclusiveness within the internet community in Nigeria. It's run by an executive board, like I said before, and has a chief operations officer who happens to be the head of the secretariat. I'm sure some people will be wondering why he's not the one making this presentation right now. But we've been so successful that we got him poached. The board consists of various individuals from different constituencies, from the government, from the private sector, from industry stakeholder associations, also from user constituencies, the press, and then the youth segment. So fairly much everyone within the internet community is covered as far as the governance of the CCTLD is concerned. It's headed by a president. Mary, a lot of people would know Mary in this room. Mary is the president of NIRA. And then we have three officers and also five executive board members. What we try as much as possible to do is to ensure that in the administration of the .ng, that stakeholder views are incorporated into policies that are brought up. Because the truth is, yes, we can come up with policies, but it's somebody that is going to be at the receiving end of that policy. Let's look at some journey so far. The adoption of the name is on the increase. When we came in 2011, when we made the presentation in 2011, we were just about brazing like 20,000, which was something that was a far cry from where we were coming from at the delegation, where we just had a few hundreds. But today, we have about 50,000 names registered and operational. Rate of adoption has been well over 60% in the last 2 years, and there's a huge growing confidence in the .ng brand. More and more stakeholders are getting more aware and are participating in our processes, which is something that gives us a lot of delight. From various stakeholders in the community, we have increased involvement, and more and more, they are the ones actually promoting the .ng brand. Also, we have deliberate policies from government where all government agencies must, of necessity today, use the .ng name as their official, either for a website or for email addresses. There's no way, today in Nigeria, you can't have a government agency using any other email address apart from a .ng. Now, one of the things that we've done is to try as much as possible to see how we can drive adoption within our space. First thing is we knew that once the train of adoption starts moving, it's going to be really, really important for us to have the infrastructure that would support the adoption. So we've just had an overhaul, an appraisal of the DNS system, and then had an overhaul. We put in new systems and backups. We signed an MOU, a memorandum of understanding, with the Internet Exchange Point of Nigeria to ensure that they give us second and third level support for our infrastructure. One of the things we've also done is to strengthen the policy making and policy monitoring and adherence framework such that people take ownership of the policies because they're involved in the processes that bring the policies about. We have a committee structure to ensure that policies are done bottom up. The committees include community members, and it's usually headed by a member of the board. Within the policy development process, we also try to make proposals, and then the community make input into the different policies that we come up with. Let's look at some of the new initiatives that we came up with. First of all is the opening up of the second level string. So right now people can actually register the straight to the .ng. And what that has done is that it's led to increased adoption. This is just about a few months old. So we're in the sunrise period. So we have a lot of people who've come up with very creative names. We have people who've come up with things like fishy.ng, which gives you phishing. Commie.ng gives you coming. Jetlaggy.ng gives you jet lagging. Travely.ng, traveling, or whatever it is that you can come up with. So a lot of creativity. We see a lot of creative names these days, and that really is gladdening to us, because what that shows is that people are taking up the opportunity that we've created. One of the things that we've also done is we understand that for names to be adopted and for our registry to be populated, we must have an audience. So we are trying as much as possible to help develop capacity within the whole community and the ecosystem. There's a lot of greater focus for us on the new generation. You and I know that youths would drive a lot of things. So we're keeping a focus on them. We have support for student organizations, both technically and sometimes financially. And also, we've appointed some .ng student ambassadors within the higher institutions in Nigeria just to make them peer initiators of different initiatives that we have. This drives learning and innovations within those university environments. We also recognize that we need to have collaboration on different things with various organizations, both locally and internationally. We have partnered with other organizations in Nigeria, some pseudo-government agencies, some government agencies, and some private agencies to come up with different things. One is the Local Internet Content Forum, whereby we said, look, Yes, we could be talking about names, we could be talking about numbers, but if there are no contents, then there's nothing the names and the numbers would display. So we came up with this idea, and we partnered with a couple of other people to bring about the forum, which is an annual event. The first one held in February this year. The next one is going to be sometime next year. And out of that, a number of initiatives have also come up, and a number of groups have also come up to produce their own kind of content and then host on the .ng. We also have an alliance with the Nigerian Internet Governance Forum, which we are co-initiators of. Then the AFTLD, we partnered with them to have a training sometime in May this year, and the ICANN DNS Roadshow was also... we also partnered with ICANN for the DNSSEC Roadshow. So, what are the next steps? We've gone into a new session, because what we've told ourselves is, yes, between 2009 and date, when we got redelegation, we've achieved it this far. So we've come up with a process by which we'll get into a strategic plan development, and that's ongoing. We have some ideas already written down, and we're also trying as much as possible to come up with more, so we'll know what next for the next five years. Stakeholders, engagement, content developers. We heard Fadi talk about the fact that in Nigeria you have more films produced than even in the United States of America. That's very true. I was in Zambia a couple of years ago and had an encounter, a very nice encounter with a gentleman who was the immigration officer. And the guy just couldn't understand why I didn't have the originals of the entry permit. And I told him, well, the sponsoring organization gave me, it's what they sent to me that I brought. While we were talking and all of that and waiting for somebody to bring the original, the gentleman looked at me, and I looked at him and I said, in the African English, I looked at him and I said, Oga. And the guy looked at me and said, Oga, which... it's only somebody from West Africa that would know what Oga is. The guy is Oga, Oga, oh, Oga, Igwe. And I was wondering where he heard that from. So I looked at him and I said, oh, he said, Africa Magic, which is a channel on DSTV. So if a Nigerian, something that would ordinarily be a Nigerian thing or a West African thing has gone as far as Southern Africa, then I think it's something to look at. So we're working with content providers to help them develop and make money from content, but of course host it on .ng. And as well as that, other technopreneurs. We also have come up with an initiative to encourage our registrars to try as much as possible to grow bigger so they could also become ICANN registrars, and that would be bigger pie for everybody. We also are looking at working with the youth segment and help them develop so that they can drive more adoption. Of course, we would continue to develop policies to make life easier for everybody around us, develop our people and our processes. All right. Thank you very much for your attention, and bon appétit.
So, Adebi, thank you very much. Okay, we break for lunch and back with the GAC in Hall 4AB, 2:15. Thank you.
Thank you.